This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Nilu Tabrizi, the co-author with her colleague and friend Fatima Jamalpour for The Sun After Long Nights, the story of Iran's women-led uprising. You've read around the edges of the suspect nuclear weapons program and the war in the Middle East that young women, especially Gen Z, but the millennials joined in as well, have been protesting the regime's brutality at least since September of 2022 and the murder of a young Azeri woman, Kurdish woman, Gina, on the streets of Tehran for no reason whatsoever. However, what I learned from the telling by Nilu and Fatima is that the rising has been going on for a long time, lots of protests all around Iran, not just in Tehran. And the police, the authorities, the Basij, the IRGC, always meet it with sadism, brutality, and murder. Who are those people, Nilu? Where do they come from to use batons on young women in the streets and beat them to death, or to open fire on a funeral procession? Where do they get them?
So it's interesting. In Iran, there's a few different competing policing systems. You have the national police, and then you also have the Iran has its own military, the Artesh, and then you also have this other unit that Fatima writes really beautifully about, called the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps. And this group, and you can see it in its name, read it in its name, Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. What is its purpose? It is there to guard the revolution, the Islamic revolution, and its ideals. So you can tell, in essence, it's really working for the system in that moment. It almost is helpful to visualize this as an octopus. So it's not just, it has many arms. It's not just a policing unit or a military unit, but the Basij, the IRGC is everywhere. There's an auxiliary, plainclothes, volunteer unit of the IRGC called the Basij that is in schools to enforce Islamic dress code. It's in part, so much of the economy is run by the IRGC and is influenced by the IRGC. So really this system is kind of bleeds into Iran. And again, thinking of it as an octopus with its many arms and how it reaches through all these different ways in Iran is really helpful. And Fatima, because she lived through that, I didn't, my family left in the 90s. She, reading her experience is really helpful to understand just day to day what it feels like to live under the system.
Let's give an example of how sadistic the authorities can be. We go to, there's so many funerals and there's so much brutality. I look at one because it's the Bakhtiar people, Fatima's group, people that she identifies with. And it's 2022, months after Gina's murder. There's a nine-year-old driving with his father, and there's a protest, and they want to bypass the protest, and they're given directions. And as they're driving correctly, according to the authorities, the nine-year-old says, "Trust them, Dad, go the way they're pointing." For no cause whatsoever, they open fire, kill the nine-year-old, and badly damage his father. There's a funeral procession that follows that, and the nine-year-old's mother is at the center of it, and yet the brutality police are all around them. What is the thinking that could make you not only murder a nine-year-old for no cause, but then brutalize and intimidate his funeral?
So the Islamic Republic has a really good understanding of grief, of being such a powerful revolutionary tool. The Islamic Republic used it itself. I mean, during the period of the Shah and, the pre-revolutionary period, there was a very influential cleric who was killed in a car accident. And people, the reporting of the time is perhaps this cleric was set up because they were so influential. And that funeral for the cleric turned into a protest and was suppressed by the Shah's forces. So I think there's already an understanding of how powerful grief can be, and how grief leads to rage and leads to action. So if the Islamic Republic is trying to continue the system as it is, they want to crack down on any of these public outpourings of grief. So I reported on a number of funerals that were for protesters who were killed by the state in 2022. When people came to mourn, these mourners turned into protesters, and there was another level of state violence there where more people were killed. So just this really grim and really grim cycle of violence that continues. And it's because the Islamic Republic knows the power of grief. They harnessed it themselves.
A note, Ma Monir, the mother of the 9-year-old and the wife of the man who's badly damaged, she is Bakhtiar, which is not the same as Shia. And it's important to mention that Iran has a number of ethnic and religious origins that make up a nation of, it's almost like a rainbow coalition. My mother's family is from the part of Iran that is Azeri, whereas Gina's from the part of Iran that's dominantly Kurdish. There are other parts. There's the Sunni part in the south near the oil fields. And I've learned, Nilo, you're to Azeri as I am. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
It's the largest of the group. So, but Nilo and Fatima make the important distinction. You don't say, hi, I'm Iranian. You don't speak in hyphenates in Farsi. Is that correct?
No, I mean, I think it's such a different experience. I think for many people that are from ethnic minorities, if they come to Tehran, there's a feeling of wanting to blend in. Like I asked my father, I said, weren't you scared to immigrate to Canada? And he said, no, because I moved to Tehran when I was 11 and that already felt like immigrating for me. Yes, he spoke Farsi in school, but his mother tongue is Azeri. That's a language he speaks at home spoke at home with his parents and his family. It's a language sometimes he speaks with my mom when he doesn't want us to hear what they're saying. But, you know, when he is like many people coming from your province to the capital, there is that need to want to blend in and assimilate for, you know, just to fit into the society. But yes, I mean, Iran is made up of many different ethnic minorities, each with their own, you know, culture and language. And yeah, just kind of all fitting together in our borders.
You help me now establish why are the Kurds brutalized more than comparative groups, other groups? Is there a reason for that?
Right. So the Islamic Republic really goes after Kurdish people just suppresses them at a rate far higher than other groups. And we can see this even in this present moment. After the days of Israeli airstrikes on Iran, Kurdish activists have gone through this incredibly grim wave of repression by the state, where they are being arrested, detained, even executed on baseless charges of cooperating with Mossad. So this crackdown and overly cracking down on Kurdish people is, you know, a facet of the Islamic Republic. And there are some reasons as to why. I mean, one that comes to mind is that the Islamic Republic is threatened by these groups because they, you know, Kurdish people have links outside of Iran. And really thinking about the Islamic Republic, anytime one person or one group feels like it could be bigger and create some type of movement, the Islamic Republic will crack down on them. You might come to mind the environmentalists that were in Iran, you know, in 10 years ago or so. Once these environmentalists were studying, you know, the lack of water, they're trying to study about the Asiatic cheetah that was becoming extinct and endangered. Once they started uncovering this, it became clear that actually government corruption and mismanagement was at the heart of this environmental issue. So again, once this issue rises and becomes bigger than one person or individual, it threatens the Islamic Republic. So they will go after, you know, groups, they will go after communities, they will go after organizations. I mean, there really is no civil society in Iran in this way because they have been so successful at suppressing this.
Also, we have Gen Z, and we make a distinction. No matter where your origins are, your parents' origins, Gen Z seem to be, well, the word fearless is not adequate, but they seem to be ignoring the hesitations of the older adults. Is that accurate?
I mean, yeah, I think we really saw the power of Gen Z in the 2022 protests. I think so many people, it can feel so scary to stand up to this this Islamic Republic, right? They're incredibly good at surveilling groups. They go after people in such a harsh and deadly way. And to see Gen Z stand up really showed the deep level of frustration, right? This is a generation that's now watched, you know, one or two generations come after the revolution, seeing that there are no job prospects, that people are living in limbo in Iran. And that creates like so much palpable rage. That makes sense. Like, I've seen the people that come before me and there's no future for me. Why wouldn't I feel rage against the system? And why wouldn't I express it?
And they do not back off the police who count on intimidating people with their brutality on the street and arresting now and again and beating now and again to scare off the crowds or the protest movements. They're not crowds, they're protest movements. And the present circumstances, because of the war, makes all of this very difficult. So we need to move to, there's some big numbers here that make no sense, but it gives you the scale. 19,000 arrested, detained in some fashion since September of 2022 because of the protests. Several thousand executed. And for no reasons whatsoever. I mean, people are executed sadistically. They're told that they're not going to be executed, and then they're taken out and hanged. So what we're looking at is a country in the hands of men who have no order whatsoever. They're mad. They're crazy with murder. And there will be a settling. But when we come back, there's a scene, which I highly recommend to everyone, in Erevan Prison, which is the centerpiece, the Bastille of the revolution, the Iranian Revolution of 79. And there's a scene in there that, except for the fact that it's in the book, and Nilo is perspicacious about documenting things, you would think it was a playwright and not history. The book is For the Sun After Long Nights, the story of Iran's women-led uprising, Nilo Tabrizi and Fatima Jamalpour, the authors.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.